And welcome to Detroit Today. I'm 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. And as always, thanks for tuning in. Just another reminder that if you are interested in listening to the confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, you can do that at our website, WDET.org. There's a link there where you can listen in to the questioning that will take place by the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee today of Judge Jackson. Also tomorrow, we're going to have Barb McQuaid, our former U.S. attorney here in Southeast Michigan and a current professor at the University of Michigan Law School, here with us to talk about what we hear today when the questioning gets started in those confirmation hearings. So again, WDET.org to listen in. When you think about the health insurance system in this country, I think it's kind of hard to come up with anybody who thinks it's working perfectly. Employers don't like having to pay for their employees' health care. And as employees, we often don't like the high costs that get passed on to us by our employers. And that's not even to take into account folks like the unemployed and the precariously employed, who often just don't have any health insurance at all. There's still millions and millions of people in this country who are uncovered. Now, that's really different from most other developed countries. Almost every country in the West, in fact, has at least a universally covered healthcare system. But here in the U.S., we have this patchwork of plans and systems that, in total, we spend more on than any other developed nation, but we don't get the same kinds of results. And yet, there are a lot of influential and powerful people who advocate against the idea of a single-payer healthcare system, the kind of thing that would solve so many of the problems, so many of the gaps that we have in the system that we all live with. For a lot of years, the American Medical Association has been one of those players who have been pushing back against the idea of switching to a single-payer system. Helping to wreck Harry Truman's 1950s universal health care bill that otherwise had majority support from Americans. That's where it started. But in recent years, the association has been showing signs that it may be ready to change its tune. To talk more about this with us is Dr. Clifford Marks. He's an emergency medicine resident at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York and author of a new piece in The New Yorker titled Inside the American Medical Association's Fight Over Single-Payer Healthcare. Dr. Marks, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephen.
So in 2019, the American Medical Association almost voted to end its explicit opposition to single-payer health care, and it lost by just 38 votes. Talk about what went into that organizing that led to that vote, and who were the supporters of ending this stance?
So I think what's something that's very interesting about the American Medical Association is it is actually relatively small-D Democratic. The policy of the association is set by a vote of a House of Delegates, which is a little over 600 people, and they're elected both from both to represent state medical associations and to represent specialties. So in a weird way, it's sort of you have kind of a version of the U.S. Congress where you know you're sort of representing states, but then you also have this this kind of confederation of specialties, and so what you sort of found in sort of who was sort of generally supporting it is both you had this kind of overlay of the U.S. political map where, you know, you had more support from states in New England or from California, mm-hmm. and more opposition, more support for the traditional anti-single payer stance from southern states, from the Texas Medical Association, for instance. But then you also kind of have kind of the politics of medical specialties where, you know, you sort of generally have more support from pediatrics and internal medicine and more opposition in general from surgical subspecialties, you know, more like orthopedic surgery. But the people who were sort of most kind of driving this were the youngest people in the American Medical Association. Mm. So the medical students, the residents, and the young physician section. And a lot of the organizing, interestingly, is done by the medical students who you know do really have a voice in the American Medical Association and have I think been very influential in pushing progressive policies, not just single payer, but I think very importantly single payer within the organization, particularly in the last decade. So the you know this is back in pre-COVID times where you know large conferences were still happening in person, and you know there's a lot of politicking that goes on at the American Medical Association meetings. Yeah. And so there's a lot of buttonholing of delegates and, you know, really trying to sound out what the support is. But I think even the medical students who were sort of most invested in organizing around this really weren't 100% sure going into it, going into this vote, what the outcome was going to be. I mean, they were really, as you mentioned, you know, the AMA has been an incredibly powerful force in the past, you know, in opposition to single payer, and you know, really kind of the single biggest reason why it didn't pass in the late 40s and early 50s when it would have been cheap to do it, and you know, before an explosion in healthcare costs.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the opposition to single payer. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, that there's a demographic difference kind of unfolding at the AMA, that younger people seem to be more open to the idea of a single payer system than perhaps some older people. Does that explain this transformation in whole? And does it dovetail, I guess, with what I think most of us who are experiencing the health system in this country might describe as the collapse of the current system? In other words, the problems that we have now, even after Obamacare, are so much more pronounced, I think, in people's lives. The money that people are spending, the care that seems out of reach, is that kind of inspiration, I guess, for this change among young doctors that you know they're also seeing a system that looks really different than what people 20 or 30 years older than from them have experienced over their lifetime.
Yeah, no, I think that plays a huge role. I think in a couple of really important ways. I mean, one is you know, as physicians we see regularly the failures of the current system. You know, patients who can't get the medication they need, you know, because it's not covered by insurance, because they can't get pre-authorizations for it. You know, patients who can't afford or can't really get into preventative care. And so, you know, this is particularly in my line of emergency medicine, we see patients end up in the emergency room all the time for conditions that, you know, if only they were sort of well plugged into the kind of primary care and preventative medicine system, you know, they probably could have avoided that and wouldn't have both the hospital bills and you know, in some more important ways, all the suffering that goes with that. But then in sort of another side of this is that, you know, physicians who are 30 and 40 years older are much more likely than physicians graduating today to own their own practices. the majority of physicians who leave residency, they end up employed by a physician group or a hospital. They're way more likely to be employees than employers. Mm-hmm. And I think that does really strongly change kind of the political outlook of people who are graduating today. What they the physicians back in Harry Truman's time, they were small business owners. They didn't have a lot of other forces to deal with in healthcare. I mean, there was an insurance industry, there was a pharma industry, but comparatively less powerful. And physicians today, they have to deal with a mammoth pharma industry, a hospital industry, an insurance industry, and they have to sort of navigate all these other things. And I think by comparison, government intervention suddenly looks considerably more palatable. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you have to slog through pre-authorizations, suddenly single payer healthcare, I think seems a lot more appealing. I think just sort of where physicians sort of sit now in the healthcare economic order, I think has really influenced what younger physicians kind of view as a more practical way of doing medicine.
Yeah, I'm talking with Dr. Clifford Marks. He's an emergency medicine resident at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, also a former journalist. We're talking about a pretty big medical institution, the American Medical Association, which has been against universal health care coverage for a really long time, and a very close vote just a few years ago where the association almost changed its mind about that and started to embrace the idea of a single-payer approach to health care in this country, one that would look more like developed countries around the world. We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. Give us a call and let us know how satisfied you are with the health care that you have. What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? And what kind of health care system would you want if you could create one for our country? Do you think a universal health care system would be better, one that was single payer or maybe even otherwise financed, but making sure that there was health care for everybody, not just emergency health care, but preventative care and all of the other things? Or are you somebody who wants to lean more into the idea of market-based medicine, that you believe that free enterprise is the way to create the level of medical care that we have and try to make sure that more people have it? As always, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter and put comments there, and we can try to include you in the show that way. Let's start with Dr. Peter Orris. He's a doctor in Illinois calling in. Dr. Orris, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. Go ahead.
Great. First, I want to salute Dr. Marks for the excellent article and also for his statements this morning, which are really quite accurate as to the shifting of thinking of practicing physicians and the frustration with the insurance industry that, is designed to make a profit for their shareholders. Mm. I'm one of the physicians at the other end of the spectrum, having practiced here at County Hospital in Chicago for 35 years in general internal medicine and occupational medicine. I'm professor of both at Rush and University of Illinois. And having said that, I've been a supporter of single payer for a number of years and a 40-year member of the AMA. I think the perception that thinking is changing, especially amongst younger physicians, and much of that is generated by the fact that physicians now have to be, in general, on salary to one or another large institution that rarely is responsive to the quality concerns of the individual doctor who's in the direct relation with the patient. Having said that, your statements are a bit of an overstatement about where we're at within the AMA itself, and that is this resolution is not or was not in favor of single payer. We're doing much better with those resolutions. They are increasing their minority support in 20% to 30%. But the resolution that was narrowly defeated at the AMA that you're referring to and in our state medical society here was a resolution just for neutrality in analysis. Prior to this point, all of the suggestions about what changes should be made in healthcare would be analyzed by the AMA, but they would deliberately exclude single payer a priori. That's a real problem. So we're now asking for just a level playing field so that physicians in general can compare the issues between the two. And then the second thing is, though, a more positive statement, and that is the AMA is on record for the last 20 years of being for universal health care. The question is, how do you provide that health care to the general population? Sure. And those of us in Physicians for a National Health Program think the only way to do it is single payer. The AMA disagrees on that. Yeah. But they're moving on this and other issues.
Yeah. Dr. Orris, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing that perspective. Dr. Marks, I want to give you a chance to respond and maybe push back against what some of what Dr. Orris is saying there.
No, Dr. Gross, thanks for calling. I think he's completely right. I do think he's 100% right, and I hopefully didn't overstate the mark. Mm-hmm. The resolution was to remove opposition to single payer.
Right.
It was not to sort of wholeheartedly endorse it. He's 100% right on that. I think he's also right that, you know, supporting universal health care is one thing. How you get there is very important. And it's important partly because, if you want to make it affordable, one of the ways to do that is to allow the single payer entity, you know, presumably the federal government, to have some power in setting pricing. That sort of makes it so that it's potentially affordable for the federal government to do. The downside from a physician perspective and from other players in the healthcare space is that means that there's potential that their reimbursements would drop. And that in a way is kind of the economic fight surrounding that. So I think he's 100% right that it's all well and good to say that you support universal coverage. How you get there is really important, and I think it's a really important question as to whether there is a possibility in the future that the American Medical Association would sort of actually come over to this camp. We're certainly not there now, but things have moved considerably in that direction.
Right? Sure. Yeah. Okay, coming up, we're going to continue this conversation about universal health care coverage, why the American Medical Association has been against it, and how the organization may be changing its tune. We'll also continue to hear from you on the phones and on social media. Terry in Detroit, Anthony in Southwest Detroit, stay put. We will get to you next. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Talking with Dr. Clifford Marks. He's an emergency medicine resident at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, also a former a journalist, he's written a piece in The New Yorker about the idea that the American Medical Association could be ready to change its mind, ready to think a little differently about the idea of a single-payer approach to healthcare in this country. The piece is titled Inside the American Medical Association's Fight Over Single-Payer Healthcare. We're talking about this idea that one of the most prominent groups of physicians in this country has been against the idea of single-payer at least since the 1950s, and the idea that maybe they're changing their mind. We want to hear what you think of the idea of a single-payer system here in the United States, universal coverage. What do you think of the healthcare that you have right now? How do you find the healthcare system that we operate under, where most of us count on our employers really to carry most of the costs of our healthcare? We end up paying a pretty hefty premium as well. Is there a better way to think about all of these things? And would it lead to better outcomes? Would it lead to us not only spending the most on healthcare in the world, but also getting the best results, which we don't? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. You can go to Twitter as well. Big Neo on Twitter writes, there is a way, but we need to have the will to have universal health care. I pay almost $600 a month for a family plan with Blue Care Network. I'd gladly switch that $600 to taxes so that all Americans can have the level of coverage that my family currently has. That's a really interesting idea. Josie on Twitter writes, from opposing membership for black physicians to edging out midwifery so that they can monopolize obstetrics, the AMA is such a problematic organization. Josie pointing to a number of other policy issues that I think are a little puzzling about such a large group of physicians. And then Glenn on Twitter writes, we in the United States conflate universal health care and single-payer financing of health care. Universal health care is provided in many of our peer nations by means other than single-payer, including Germany, Japan, Australia, and Switzerland. I think that's a really important point, Dr. Marks. Talk about that distinction and how that plays out in the AMA, the idea of universal coverage and then how we pay for it. Single payer is one approach, but you could have a universal system that looks different.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. There's more than one way to get to universal health care. Some of the systems you mentioned, I'm not intimately familiar with the details of every one, but Germany, for instance, does sort of have a hybrid system where it's kind of like it's government finance for lower income Germans, but it's sort of more private insurance base for others, but the government still has a role there in strongly limiting the amount of kind of out of pocket costs that Germans face. So while there's more than one way to get to universal healthcare, but I think what's really important from a patient perspective is do you have a system that where you know, people can face such astronomical charges that they go bankrupt, or can they simply not afford the care at all? So, I think what people find appealing about single payer is honestly its simplicity, and the fact that it sort of allows the government to really sort of exert some control over prices. And prices are really particularly in the U.S. healthcare system, kind of really one of the primary culprits when you're looking at why we pay so much more here than other countries. So, I totally agree that single payer is not the only way to address that. But but I do think there's a difference in a universal healthcare system where people sort of have a theoretical access to high quality healthcare, and a universal healthcare system where income is really isn't. It isn't a barrier to sure. accessing high quality care.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Anthony in Southwest Detroit, you're up next. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen. Hey. I just think, you know, at the heart of it, I never knew the role the AMA played in all this, but, you know, I think of it as a political question, really. And to be honest, you know, with politicians, there's really they either support it or they don't, you know, and that's what we have based on their statements, their track record. Mm-hmm. But even for those who support it, you know, I don't even get the sense that they're actively building support for it. And I really think that comes down to that this issue. It's never really been a campaign issue except for the 2016-2020 Bernie Sanders campaign. Mm-hmm. And there's really no discipline in our electorate or media for making this an issue. And you know, I've just had some observations from some of our, you know, former Michigan politicians, you know, they're in the Democratic Party, which endorses this idea in their platform as a couple of years ago. And a couple of them, you know, some of them support it, some of them don't. But when you look deeper into the details, you might question whether any of them really do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it certainly hasn't been a priority for leadership, right? And that's how in the political context you might get something like this done if Speaker Pelosi or the Senate Majority Leader might say, hey, we want to get this done, then you could see political movement, I think, on something like this. I still believe that even within the Democratic Party, you have far too many people who are not enthusiastic about this in order for that to happen. I mean, you do need to be able to get, you know, we've got to convince people that this is the right direction to go in order to support it politically. Dr. Marks, I wonder if you can talk a little about the relationship between what something like the AMA thinks about this is to politics. If the AMA were to come out and say, hey, universal coverage, single payer, that's the best approach to this, how much influence would it have over that political conversation? Would it give people cover? Would it inspire more people to come out and say, I agree with the AMA and we ought to do this?
I think it's a really interesting question. One of the things I mentioned earlier is that, you know, physicians are no longer kind of the only political force in the healthcare industry. So I do think, you know, the AMA's clout is not what it was, you know, in the late 40s and early 50s when they really were able to be the prime mover in ensuring that Harry Truman's plan didn't pass. Mm-hmm. But they still spend plenty of money on lobbying. They are still, you know, the largest professional organization of physicians. So, you know, their voice does carry weight. You know, they came out in favor of Obamacare in 2009. I think that was meaningful, and I think even more meaningful was them not actively opposing it. And so it's hard to say for sure. I mean, and I think something that there are, you know, sort of in the way the caller is sort of skeptical of politicians who say they're in favor of single payer but don't seem to, you know, be kind of talking about it every turn. I think there are some people who are skeptical that doctors, you know, it may be all well and good the doctors say they're in favor of single payer, but if push comes to shove and there's actually like a proposal that has a chance of passing, and there's, you know, and physicians are really staring down, you know, the potential of reduced earnings in the future, I think there are some people who are understandably skeptical about whether or not, you know, that support will really be there in the needed way. You know, it's one thing to sort of put out a press release and say you're in favor of something. It's another thing to really
to go vote on it, you know, on it, or work
yeah,
for
put
it.
Your yeah, put your shoulder to the wheel. So yeah. It's a really interesting question. I think the honest answer is we just don't know at this point.
Yeah. Again, Anthony, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go to Terry in Detroit. Terry, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning, Stephen and hey. Dr. Marks. Thank you for yet another great program, Stephen. Thank you for the good work you do on Detroit Airways every day.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to say the free enterprise system has gotten us what we have, and what we have is the most expensive care in the world, and that care leaves millions of people, tens of millions of people behind. It bankrupts millions of people. I think at some point we got to frame this differently and start talking about what our values are and what we want to do. We're the richest country ever. We can afford to have a certain level of health care for everyone, but we don't. But we still pay more than everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we ought to maybe put our values out in the front and then come up with some solutions that make sense. I think imposing solutions, you know, I've heard a lot of back and forth about single payer. I don't know if it's the right answer or not. But I think we have to start by framing this a little different so that more people can understand if we spend less of our GDP on healthcare, we have more money to spend on other things, roads, bridges, water infrastructure, whatever it is.
Mm. Terry, that's a really, I mean, I think that's a really interesting way to think about this is kind of reframing it and talking about priorities. Dr. Marks, is that some of what's going on in the AMA as well? This, I guess, the reassessment of what matters to doctors about healthcare and access.
Yeah, no, I think particularly among younger physicians, there's a, you know, I think the AMA sort of, you know, I talked to someone who used to lead the young physicians section, and she told me at the AMA, and she told me that, you know, in the 70s and 80s, the AMA was really focused on kind of pocketbook issues for doctors. And I think what she's found and certainly what I heard from a lot of younger physicians and medical students who I talked to is, you know, they really are putting, you know, their values front and center. And that was a lot of, you know, why they went into medicine. And, you know, they really want the healthcare system they work in to, you know, hopefully reflect those values, but at least not kind of like actively stand against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another sort of piece here that's important is in kind of explaining that shift in values is that the precedent really has become significantly more diverse in the last, you know, 50 years. And, you know, in the sort of time of Harry Truman, it really was the preserve, you know, almost exclusively of white men. And, you know, now more than half of medical students are women, more than half are non-white. You know, this is not to say that there aren't still diversity problems. There very, very much are, you know, particularly, you know, they're still not a representative number of Hispanic, Black, or Native American physicians, but you know, it's a market change from what was before, and I think kind of bringing in you know, people from communities who weren't represented, you know, sort of more first generation doctors.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen kind of different priorities, and I think that's reflected in a lot of what a younger generation of physicians is pushing for here.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones and hear from Ryan in Harrison Township. He's going to have an interesting point of view on this. He is a fourth-year medical student, someone who's about to become a doctor. Ryan, welcome
Hi.
To the show. Hey, go ahead.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. You know, I just jumped in my car and turned on the show, and I just wanted to, you know, add a few comments. You know, I think among, you know, my peers and younger medical students, you know, it's something we're excitedly talking about. I just matched on Friday. I'm going into emergency medicine. And, yeah, thanks. And but I read this really great book last year. It's called Medicare for All by Abdul El Said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, he's a local. And
a good friend of our show too. He comes on quite a bit.
Exactly. And I think that book does a really good job of kind of explaining kind of the intricacies and the complexities of healthcare. And you don't even need to go to medical school to understand it. I think he does a really good job of highlighting the high points in this book. Thanks for having me on.
So Ryan, before I let you go, I want to give you a chance just to talk about the things that you see as somebody who's studying to become a doctor, and whether, I guess, in your mind, we could do better with a single payer system, the level of care that you're seeing people be able to get. Would it be better? What have you learned so far?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think in that respect, we spend so much in healthcare, and per person, you could actually give, people $10,000 a year, and, everybody in this country. And so I think in terms of quality of care and just financially, that idea is really attractive, especially because, there's a lot of people, they're spending a third of their take home on healthcare, And so hopefully that answers your question, but at least that's what I'm seeing, and it's really frustrating too. As a student, you're on rotations, and you have physicians. They prescribe medications, and people can't fill it, or they come to the ER because they can't afford to go see a doctor. So that's really frustrating.
Yeah. Ryan. Congratulations on matching. I know how big a deal that is, and we hope that you have great success in your future. But I really appreciate your call and your perspective on this. Dr. Marks, I'll give you a chance to follow up or respond to what Ryan said.
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations to you on matching. I didn't match in emergency medicine. I obviously am somewhat partial to that. I think he's really right. It's a really, I think as doctors, we're sort of, taught we really shouldn't be sort of thinking about costs in a way. We should be
thinking about care.
Yeah, exactly. We should be, if there's a right treatment, we should give that treatment. I think that's sort of like the ideal. And then you get into this medical system where, you have patients and they can't afford the treatment that you think they should have. And I think it's really, it's really sort of dispiriting and disillusioning. I think you see it every day. And I think it really has caused a lot of younger doctors or people who are on the cusp of becoming doctors to really question, can this possibly be the best system? And think there really must be a better way to provide care than what we're doing right now.
Okay, Dr. Clifford Marks, emergency medicine resident at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, and author of this piece in The New Yorker titled Inside the American Medical Association's Fight Over Single-Payer Healthcare. It was really great to have you here with us to talk about this issue. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a really wonderful conversation.
Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we are going to talk with scholar Barb McQuaid, former U.S. attorney here in Southeast Michigan, about the latest on Supreme Court confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. This is 101.9 WDET, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.